This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld. The flood relief effort in Louisiana continues, and I have to say, in this time of devastation, I can't help but be encouraged by people's faith and perseverance. Louisiana is a strong state, driven by strong people. President Obama visited Louisiana earlier this week, and while he was there, the president was with a group of several political leaders, one of which was Congressman Garrett Graves, the representative from the congressional district which includes Baton Rouge. He joined Tony on Wednesday.
Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. Great to be on.
Let's talk first. I want to get into the president's visit, but I first want to get an update on the relief effort and what you're seeing take place throughout this area, which covers a lot of your district that's been impacted by this flood.
Tony, what's been so remarkable about this disaster is that people didn't sit around and wait for government to come in. When the floodwater started rising and surprised so many people, you saw what we deemed the Cajun Navy coming out and very quickly grabbing their own boats, their own rescue supplies, and picking up neighbors. You very quickly saw, when the floodwaters receded, people grabbing their barbecue pits and heading out to parking lots and absolutely cooking for thousands of people just with whatever food they could find in their freezers. And then now, you can drive down virtually any of these flooded streets, and you will see virtually every home has already been gutted because neighbors have stepped in and just helped one another out.
Yeah, it is. It's been quite remarkable. As I had mentioned earlier, one of the first calls that I made was to Samaritan's Purse, to Franklin Graham and his team. They were down here within 48 hours. They've been going in and helping people who don't have the family or the resources to tear out and gut their homes. They're doing that. And you're right, family helping family. But it's very difficult because there's hardly a family in most of these communities that has not been impacted. When, like, for instance, in the community that our church is located, that you visited the other night in Central, over half the homes in that community have flooded.
The impacts are tremendous. I don't think that many people really appreciate how traumatic this flood has been. As you know, the average national rainfall for the United States is about 31 inches a year. And we received that in pretty much 2 days. And so just a catastrophic flood, and I did fail to mention, while all of our community members are out there helping one another, it absolutely is all surrounded or coordinated by our churches, our faith-based community, and groups like Samaritan's Purse, and of course Liberty University was out there at the church this week as well. Just awesome. Because when you go into a home and someone has lost everything, and this has happened so many times where people just tell you, they start naming all the things they've lost, their clothes, their furniture, their car, and they say, I don't have anything left except God. Or they say, I don't have anything left, and we remind them, you do have God. And I'll tell you, that is such an important part of our recovery. And the faith-based community has been awesome at stepping up and coordinating this and helping people, helping restore hope to many of these people that otherwise didn't have it.
Well, well, let me use that as a transition then to the president's visit yesterday. And prior to him coming down, he did take time to allow his administration to issue, I think, a 16-page memo on how not to discriminate in relief efforts down here, which, quite frankly, I take offense to, because we have helped every person who has walked through the door of our churches, including Muslim couples, people of different color, different faith. Does not matter. We don't ask them that. We just help them. Nobody asked, what somebody's orientation was or what their ethnic background was when they picked them up in a boat and carried them away from a flooded home. And quite frankly, I find that offensive that this president would do that.
the memo absolutely does not represent our community and doesn't recognize our values down here. It was a misfire. Absolutely. Just missed the mark.
Now, the president yesterday praising his administration for FEMA's response to this, and he did make a comment that this is bigger than what the government can handle, that it's going to require the faith-based community and the nonprofit sector. But I find it very interesting and a contrast between Donald Trump, when he came down, where he came to a church, actually two churches, two different faith-based operations that were responding to this. He did get a briefing from officials in Ascension. He also toured neighborhoods. Big contrast to where the president went.
It really was. Trump was, first of all, I think, very well received down here, and he did bring supplies. He brought a check, and I think was very well received in the community. And as you noted in the opening, it was the first real national figure that we had come down here, because the president had not come down. And so very well received. And I'll tell you, I was optimistic that the president was going to come down, and after seeing a bit of this, recognize how catastrophic this was, and offer up some type of relief to this community that many of which have lost virtually everything. And unfortunately, that didn't happen.
You can find ways to help the people of Louisiana when you go to TonyPerkins.com/flood. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com/flood. When we return, we'll be joined by North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch. The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Family Research Council believes that federal policymakers should take action to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We've discussed several times on this program the efforts by the Obama administration to force public schools to allow men to use women's restrooms and shower facilities. However, this week, the administration's agenda took another blow as a federal judge in Texas blocked the bathroom policy. For now, it's a win for common sense safety. Where does this go from here? North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest joined Tony with that answer.
Lieutenant Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, it's always great to be with you, and welcome back yourself.
Well, it's good to be here. Let me say, you've got to be pleased that yet another judge has ruled in favor of the common sense approach that you all have taken when it came to this bathroom policy.
Yeah, I mean, every one of these decisions is helpful. The media in North Carolina is obviously spinning it, saying this has nothing to do with North Carolina lawsuit. Certainly there was, the judge himself said those lawsuits are going to continue to go forward. But as you know, legal precedent does matter when these judges make decisions like this. It's influential to the other judges around the country who end up having these cases. So, we're very thankful for this case in Texas. And we think, this judge's decision was spot on in every regard. All the things we've been talking about for months in North Carolina about protecting women and children in these facilities and the federal overreach. And, it's absolutely shameful what the administration tried to do. And the judge was very clear in saying, you didn't go through the proper rule of law procedures, the rulemaking procedures, as has been pretty much the precedent for this administration for quite some time.
Well, and for all of the above, that is the reason I think it's got to be encouraging to you all, because this judge basically took what you have been saying and the governor has been saying there in North Carolina and said, nope, I'm gonna stay this decision by the president. They've got an injunction here to keep this from going into effect. So it, I think it does bolster your position. And you are correct. These other cases are going to go forward, but legal precedent does matter. But also the facts. The judge would not have done this had he not felt like the facts were substantial in that this was a bad policy.
Yeah, no doubt. And some of the behind-the-scenes things that are going on here in North Carolina, people, you know, on your listening to your show may not be aware of, but down in Mecklenburg County, the superintendent down there and the school board was in the process of putting together their own transgender policy and saying, you know, you need to disregard what the state of North Carolina law says because this is what the president says. And they were going to move forward with that. So this is a really big deal. This protects, you know, girls in schools in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools right now as well. You know, I have a couple daughters and, you know, even our opponents out there right now are saying they call it progress. When my daughter has to walk into a shower facility, say my 12-year-old daughter has to walk into a shower with a grown man that may be even a pedophile, they call that progress. That's absolutely shameful. And so this judge was spot on, and this judge may well have saved a little girl in a school locker room, shower, bathroom somewhere down in Mecklenburg County.
I want to ask you another question related to this, and it's the NBA making their announcement that they're pulling next year's All-Star game from your state, and they're moving it to my home state of Louisiana, to New Orleans. Now, the problem I see here is New Orleans has the same policy that North Carolina has. That is, they won't force a private entity to adopt the president's bathroom policy. In fact, Louisiana has joined a lawsuit suing the Obama administration over this policy. Am I missing something here?
Well, you're not missing anything because you get it. But it, you know, this is, I tell people, this isn't ideology. This is politics. We have an election on November 8th. North Carolina's a battleground state. There's a lot of power that the other side has had here for a long time, and they won it back. And so this is the Mark Benioffs of the world at Salesforce calling the CEO of PayPal, calling the CEO of Pepsi or Coke or whoever the sponsors are at the NBA, saying they're going to withdraw their support from the All-Star game unless they make a move like this. And so this is the Human Rights Campaign at their best, doing what they do behind the scenes to influence politics in the state. So no, you haven't missed anything, because the NBA and in Charlotte have the same rights to do whatever they wanted to with their signs on their bathrooms and their arenas during the All-Star game. They could have changed that if they wanted, but they chose not to.
Yeah, and that's why I want to drive that point home. The state of North Carolina does not prohibit a private entity from doing this crazy stuff. It simply says governments cannot force them to do it, correct?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, we the city of Charlotte, under their ordinance that we had to strike down, was telling private businesses what they had to do. We said, no, City of Charlotte, you can't do that. Private businesses, you can do whatever you want. Do at your own peril. You know, what Target did with changing their bathroom policy cost them billions of dollars. But you know what? Under our bill, they had the right to do that. And so, you know, the people will speak with their pocketbooks and shopping at places like Target or going to an NBA game, but they have the full right to do that.
Right. And your policy doesn't change that. It simply says government cannot force them, which is what the left wants. They want government to force people because they know that's the only way they can accomplish this.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And they call that progress when the government is forcing people to do things like this. And that's it's a shameful act. And, you know, as a reminder to your listeners, it was an extortionary act from the federal government as well in the Obama administration when they were saying that unless we changed our law, they were going to withhold federal funding based on Title VII and Title IX, which you and I both know is a ridiculous argument.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, thanks so much for joining us today and giving us an update. We're going to continue to track this and also encourage folks there in North Carolina, which is a battleground state, to make sure that they are registered and voting in this upcoming election.
Well, thanks a lot, Tony. Thanks for having me on, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks up in D.C. at Value Voter Summit.
To find out more about the legislation in North Carolina, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, a look at how the Red Cross is changing for the worse. We'll be back with more Washington Watch right after this. Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. I have been amazed the past few weeks at how, during one of the toughest times in Louisiana history, the state has come together. People from all over the country have also played an important role in this recovery effort. However, if you find yourself at the Red Cross location in Lafayette, Louisiana, and someone asks you to pray for them, you might be asked to leave the premises. Law enforcement officer Clay Higgins joined Tony on Thursday to explain what happened.
Captain Higgins, welcome to Washington Watch.
Brother Perkins, it's an honor to speak with you, sir. And let me say at the outset, I commend you so much, man, for through the years for handling the unjust persecution that you've suffered, sir, as a Christian and a patriot American. I've followed you through the years, and it's my first opportunity. It's my great honor to speak to you. I just want to commend you for your strength and courage that you've shown, sir.
Well, thank you, Captain. I appreciate that. And some of our listeners may recognize the voice from your days as in Crime Stoppers and pointing out criminals that you're going to hunt them down and get them. And in fact, you did. But you're also a born-again, Bible-believing Christian who cares deeply for people. And you were in Lafayette. You were at one of the Red Cross shelters, simply encouraging people who asked for prayer, encouraging them at a time when they've lost everything. But you ran into some difficulty. Tell our listeners about it.
I did. Tony, I stopped just as a matter of conscience. It just came on my heart. I was not far away. And I just stopped by to give love, man. Just love and compassion and hugs and handshakes and perhaps to shed some tears. And of course, a prayer was always on my lip as Father commanded us for my fellow man that was suffering in this way. But, you know, I was also there to pray, you know, more directly if anyone wanted me to with them. And that was my spirit. That was my true spirit. I was just going to stop by for a while, maybe an hour or so, and offer love and Christian compassion to my fellow man. And I did that successfully for maybe half an hour or so within the facility, and the people that I interacted with were very receptive, and they, you know, I had several meaningful, you know, conversations with folks that had been, you know, lost everything, man. And there was some handshakes and some hugs and some tears were shed, and what's wrong with that? Just human compassion for each other. And of course, I was in uniform. I was obviously not a threat. I'm a pretty well-known guy in the area, but I didn't go around introducing myself and you know, there was no trumpets blaring, as we say. I didn't take a microphone and announce that I was there to pray with anyone. I just sort of quietly moved around through the facility, offering love and compassion and prayers and words of encouragement. And I was about half an hour into that when I was approached by a gentleman whom I had met before, ironically, at a church gathering, a church that I'd spoken at. And he said, Captain Higgins, he reminded me that we had met before. And he said, Captain Higgins, I very much appreciate you personally being here. He was a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, the Red Cross has an issue with you being here. And I said, all right. What could that be? You know, what could possibly the issue be? And he gestured towards my Bible. And I had a, you know, regular Bible in my hand. It's rather well worn right now. But it's a King James Version Bible, and it's the one that I use. You know how Bibles get. They're worn out. They just kind of become a piece of us. And he indicated that he sort of gestured towards it, and he said they have an issue with that. And I was very surprised by that. Brother Perkins, but I'm certainly not was going to cause a scene or anything. I said, all right, well, I'm sorry. I'm not out here. You know, I'm not trying to convert anyone. I'm just sharing love and compassion. And he said, Cap, just please come talk to the Red Cross people. So he basically escorted me out of that area into the sort of, the administrative area that had been set up for the shelter itself. And he introduced me to the gentleman that was in charge, who was himself a very kind man. But he very clearly explained to me that I was not allowed to do that, that the Red Cross was not a religiously affiliated organization, and that they were religious neutral, and that they didn't allow spiritual counseling. He said that if I was going to offer prayer, I'd have to have that approved, and they would set me up a little table, and I would have to stay at that table, and then if people came to me to pray, that would be authorized. But that I wasn't allowed to just walk around offering Christian compassion and prayers in the manner that I had been doing it.
It's not surprising. I mean, I've heard other stories, and I've actually had some experiences that have not been extremely positive with the Red Cross when it comes to that. But I think it's the secular bent that our society has gone, enforced, I think, in part by the federal government, because they do contracting work with the federal government. And this president has made very clear where he stands on those issues. Captain, I just want to – we're almost out of time, but I want folks to understand, when you're talking about people in probably most of these cases who lost everything. And because
right.
I can't tell you the number of people we've prayed with in the last week and a half that they've lost all hope in terms of no insurance, no ability to rebuild, and they're looking for someone to help them through this difficulty.
That's right. And the Lord places us in people's paths. He gives us missions if we'll just listen. If we'll only take from bended knee in our spirit, we can listen to the Father's guidance, and He'll never steer us wrong. And that's why I was there. You know, it wasn't about me. Man, it wasn't about that they needed me. I was just a messenger of what they needed. I was the deliverer of the nourishment that the people needed at that moment. And to be uplifted by just the presence of the Lord's word and His love and His encouragement.
Captain, we're going to stay on this story because I want to see what happens and see if there's any changes here to the way the Red Cross operates. But in the meantime, you stay on that mission. We'll be checking back with you a little later.
If you'd like to help out those impacted by the flooding in Louisiana, head on over to TonyPerkins.com/flood. When we come back, we'll be joined by Congressman Lamar Smith of Texas. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
What's at stake at this election? A lot. From the freedom to publicly practice and proclaim your faith to the nomination of Supreme Court justices, matters of critical importance to Christians are looming in the days ahead. That's why we invite you to join us on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. for the Values Voters Summit. Come to learn, be encouraged, and meet others who will stand for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server has been in the news a lot lately, and for all the wrong reasons. And we're not really sure exactly what was on those servers. Well, now Congress has decided to go to the source, literally. This past Monday, House Science, Space, and Technology Committee Chairman Lamar Smith subpoenaed the three software companies that provided services to Secretary Clinton. What does the chairman expect to uncover? He's the representative from the 21st Congressional District of Texas, Lamar Smith, and he joined Tony on Thursday.
Lamar, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to be with you and your listeners, and appreciate everything you're doing.
Well, thank you, and congratulations. I understand you have a new grandson.
That is true. First grandchild this morning, and all are well, and all are happy, and all are healthy, so we're grateful.
Especially Grandpa.
Yep. Right.
Well, congratulations on that. I told our listeners about the subpoenas that you issued to these three technology companies that were supporting Hillary Clinton's private servers. What do you hope to find out from the questions you're pursuing with these companies?
We have, as I say, we've subpoenaed these three companies, and we hope and expect them to cooperate. And we're trying to find out whether they and the individuals server who they maintained was operating within the government standards when it comes to use of servers, be it private or be it public, and official. And so we talked yet. We're hoping to talk to them in the next week or two to find out whether, among others, Hillary Clinton was operating her server under government standards.
Now, when you talk about standards,
she was not doing so.
When you talk about standards, you're talking about, like, for instance, security, so the stuff could not be compromised, right?
Correct. This is primarily of interest to us because of the possible breach in national security or the threat to national security. That's correct.
One other question just that I'm interested in, you know, she had these private servers. They're called private. Did she pay for them privately, or did she use government funds to pay for them?
Good question. I don't know that. I know that the State Department was aware of the servers, and quite frankly, I think there were a couple of instances where lower-level officials might have objected and then were told not to object anymore. They were overridden by upper-level officials. So the State Department was aware of what she had. Whether or not they paid for it or she paid for it, I don't know.
I mean, I would think that would be a factor as well.
Yeah,
in the overall, not
question.
Your committee necessarily, but the overall investigation into
right.
how she actually funded this effort.
Yeah. I don't, and all the things that I've read, I don't remember that the government actually paid for it. It was, so she was operating kind of offline on her own server. And that's what enabled her to do the thing she did, which was to send emails that might not have been secure, to decide to delete tens of thousands of emails just on her own say-so that they were not work-related. Now we found out that wasn't true.
Yeah, maybe the foundation paid for the servers. Who knows?
Yeah. I started to say that a while ago, but I don't know.
Well, let me say. All right, Congressman Lamar Smith, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And again, congratulations on the new grandson.
Thanks for mentioning that, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.